From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation or on the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, how does the human mind respond to life or death circumstances? Get ready for that, but here's what's happening. Well, you know, on this program, we talk about a lot of Earth changes. We'll listen to this one. A coronal mass ejection hit Earth's magnetic field today. The impact was not a strong one, but it could stir up some polar geomagnetic storms anyway. But the big story is sunspot AR1429 has unleashed another major flare. This one is the strongest yet, an X5 class eruption. This eruption hurled a bright CME into space. They say a glancing blow to our planet's sphere, possibly on March 8th or 9th. Mitch Batras, Earth Changes Media, with us. Mitch, are we going to dodge this? This thing looked like it was headed right. It looked on the sun. I saw a picture of the sunspot. It looked like it was directly aimed at us.
It's almost there. It's definitely not a glancing blow. I'm not sure who put that press release out. This one is not a glancing blow. It's not a direct hit either. However, now 1429 has rotated in position to what's called the solar meridian, in other words, basically the middle of the sun, if there's another one, which I have no reason to believe that there will not be, this one would be directly Earth-directed, I mean, like zeroing in.
And an X5 is big enough to knock out part of the grid, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. And this 1429 has been extremely active, and it's really large. I do have a picture up on my website. It has already, just in the last 30 hours, it's produced 7 M-class flares.
Jeez.
And numerous C-class flares. And it's not going to stop now, the latest being the X5. And here's what worries me a little bit, George. And I, if you want to call it a prediction, fine. Really, it's just research. In 2008, and that's when cycle 23 was winding down, and now we were talking about cycle 24 that we're in now. There were some in NASA that had come forward that I have had on the show that said cycle 24 was going to be larger than cycle 23. Well, it's been so quiet that it kind of lulled people to sleep. And I said, this is what's going to happen. It's going to be like a tropical storm that people kind of watch. Maybe it turned into a small hurricane, Category 1, and then the next day, boom, we're looking at a Category 4. That's what I believe since 2008, that I believe that this is the way this solar cycle is going to present itself.
All right, Mitch, we're going to keep watching this. Mitch Batras, his website, earthchangesmedia.com, and like we said, an X5 flare shot off. It's going to hit part of the planet. I don't know how bad it's going to be. But the big problem is that this huge sunspot is facing directly at us now. So if it unleashes any more, and it's got the capability of doing that, as you just heard from Mitch, it could be a disaster. Now, here's a story that is receiving little attention around the planet, but not by us. The Ugandan government has come under fire for its handling of a very mysterious disease that has killed hundreds of children in the northern part of this impoverished East African nation. The illness is called the nodding disease, characterized by symptoms similar to epilepsy. It has already afflicted more than 1,000 children since June. The cause unknown? There is no cure. Victims often nod their heads uncontrollably. Many also suffer from mental retardation and stunted growth. Very strange story there. Thousands of people in the United Kingdom are dying unnecessarily because they are too scared to mention early symptoms of cancer to their doctors, according to experts. A survey of 2,000 people for the Cancer Research Organization in the UK suggests that 40% might delay getting symptoms checked out because they're worried what the doctor might say. Now, isn't that crazy? You go to the doctor because you want him to tell you something so you can fix it, take care of yourself. But in the United Kingdom, they will not tell the doctor they have any symptoms. And they say then 40% of them die unnecessarily. Strange story there. The Department of Homeland Security is finalizing its plan for a biometric data system to track when immigrants leave the United States, and they'll present it to Congress within weeks. An exit system to track who is leaving the country and when has been sought before the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Imagine this now. You've left the university with a good degree, and after months of searching, you have found what could be the very perfect job. The one caveat is that you are required to hand over all your information about your Facebook profile and other social networks to proceed. But for one person, this intrusion was way too much to bear. A Maryland corrections officer refused to hand over his Facebook login password during an interview to be recertified for his old job with the Department of Corrections there. The practice has now been suspended pending a review, which was designed to check for gang and organized crime affiliations, though it calls into question the practices of prospective employers in both the public and private sector and what they can ask of you to gain your employment. Now, how far would you go to attain that perfect job? Would you give your employer all your login information to all your social networks? Lauren Weinstein, of course, involved with the Internet. He's with us here. Lauren, this is an incredible story.
It's not just incredible. It's outrageous when you really start to think about it. I always say that what's public is public. In other words, if you're putting public information out on Facebook or on other social networks, then you shouldn't expect that anybody might look at it. On the other hand, if you have information that you've put some level of privacy on, for example, you've restricted it to your friends and your family, your specific followers, anything that's not fully public, then you should have the expectation of being able to protect that. What's going on here now is these government agencies and prospective employers and others who are saying, give us your password or make us your friend so that we can see all that other information. And that's literally what they're doing. That's basically like saying we are demanding to be able to spy on your family and your friends.
Anytime we want.
Anytime we want, or at least for as long as we want. And if you won't let us do that, go away. I think that this is the sort of thing that where we should be very seriously considering a legal prohibition. I mean, this is the sort of thing where it should not be legal to force someone or even to request someone to hand over their private login information or to force someone to let you be their friend, some friend.
That's right.
To look at the information that should be restricted, that you've set to be restricted to your family and friends. If they want to look at your public information, that's fine.
That's fine.
But trying to force themselves into your family and friends, that should be illegal.
You got it. Lauren, thanks so much. Lauren Weinstein. We turn to him for all these Internet questions. He's one of the best. Lenders in January took back nearly 91,000 distressed properties, which includes foreclosures and short sales. That's up 29% from the previous month. In the next few months, experts say those homes will make their way back to the marketplace to join the already high percentage, the glut of distressed homes being snatched up by some buyers. A woman was killed when her husband, who had been drinking, accidentally shot a homemade cannon into the couple's home. Homicide detectives in San Diego County are investigating the 33-year-old woman's death. Authorities say that she was found dead after a cannonball fired by her husband and another man slammed into a residence at the Twin Lakes Resort Mobile Home Park. It appears the accident happened when the two men were tinkering with the cannon, and it just exploded off. Super Tuesday for the Republicans. Mitt Romney inching ahead. Still a long way to go. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. This still could be a brokered convention, John, when they meet in August in Tampa.
Well, it could be, George, but I think most people believe that Romney will eventually take this. It takes 1,144 delegates. He's well on his way now. I think that unfortunately, really does very poorly in the South, it appears. So it really kind of gives an X-ray in terms of the internecine warfare that is going on between the Christian evangelicals who really supported Bush for those two terms and now a Mormon running for president in Romney. So the party has a lot of reconciliation to do before all the ducks line up. I think everybody's been waiting for Romney to land the knockout punch, and it just didn't happen this Super Tuesday. But he did win Ohio. He squeaked it out over Santorum, and I think that was a huge boost to Romney's campaign. And I think it's the Santorum people and, of course, the others that are really not in the race. It's really a two-man race right now. Are getting that sinking feeling about their campaign.
I think so, too. Had he not taken Ohio, he would have had a problem tonight, John.
Well, I think so. I think there would have been a lot of doubt, a lot more doubt about Romney now that he's taken Ohio. I think it's given him a real shot in the arm in terms of finishing this off. But this thing could still drag on for a few months right now before he could get the rest of the delegates.
Well, and Romney is still strong on the East and West Coast as well. And if he can take New York and California, then like you said, he could be well on his way.
Well, the rest of the primary schedule actually favors Romney. That's the whole point, that once you get out of the South, I think that, you know, the Western states, the big states in New York and California, Illinois, I think they're leaning strongly toward Romney. That's why I think most people think that this is pretty much a lock. It's just going to drag on for a while.
John's website, onlinecolumnist.com. An 81-year-old woman, Louise White of Newport, Rhode Island. She is the winner of the third largest Powerball jackpot in the history of the game. $336.4 million. Now, she's 81 years old, and she had an option of taking 30 payments paid out over 29 years. That would have made her 111. Or to take a lump sum, but they'd have to pay hefty taxes, $52 million in federal taxes, $14 million in state taxes. What did she elect to do? What do you think? Well, she took it in a lump sum, of course, $210 million. Sixth largest among all the lotteries in the United States, and her chance of hitting the Powerball, 1 in 175 million. Good job there. And dirty snow melts faster than clean snow, right? Nowhere is this clearer than the glaciers of the Himalayas, where scientists have recorded accelerated melting, coinciding with a grain of the glaciers caused by Asia's industrial revolution, which is pumping out lots of smoke, and the soot sets on the hills of the Himalayas, and the glaciers melt faster. Up next, Robert Felix joins us, not by fire, but by ice. He keeps telling us we're in the beginning stages of an ice age. Well, back in 1991, Robert Felix really became interested in ice age stories, spent the next 8.5 years researching, writing about the coming ice age. During his work, he couldn't help but notice that magnetic reversals had occurred in sync with the arrival of all kinds of situations on our planet. Here he is back on Coast to Coast for the hour, Robert Felix, not by fire, but by ice. Robert, how are you?
I'm fine, George. How are you today?
Good. Good to have you with us. What's going on? This planet is still topsy-turvy weather-wise, isn't it?
Well, you know, one of the things I want to talk about first, I just heard you tell a news story about dirty
snow up there on the Himalayas.
Well, you know, I just posted an article on my website on February 8th, so I think that's pretty up to date. The Himalayas have lost no ice in the past 10 years, according to the study. And so, you know, I wonder where all of this other information comes from. We're talking about the greatest chain of ice-capped peaks in the world, from the Himalayas to Tian Shan on the border of China and Kyrgyzstan. Satellite measurements show that they have lost no ice in the past 10 years. And I do have that on my website for anybody who wants to see it. It's a glaciologist, Bristol University glaciologist, Professor Jonathan Bamber, said that is a very unexpected result, which is not significantly different from zero. So, you know, the IPCC said that all of the Himalayan glaciers would disappear in just 26 years by 2035.
You don't see that happening.
No, it's not happening. What we're actually seeing is the glaciers are growing. The glaciers on Mount Everest are growing. Namba Parbat, the glaciers are growing. On K2, the glaciers are growing. So I think we should take some of this stuff about melting glaciers with a great big grain of salt.
Robert, we are technically, and we still are, in winter, and we have been having huge tornadoes through the Midwest and the South much earlier than I can remember. What's your take on that?
My take on that, and I'm certainly not an expert there, but I think that it has to do with the low sunspot measurements that we're having. And again, I think that is an indication that we're headed into at least a little ice age. But what I'm seeing is that changes the jet stream, and it changes, you know, because we're having all those tornadoes in the United States. What, more in the first 2 days of the month than we usually get all month?
I know. That's crazy.
But the same, at the same time, we go over to Europe and we're having what they're calling epic snowstorms, historic snowstorms. So it's, I think it's all part and parcel of the same thing.
I know Russia has been freezing, parts of Europe freezing. It's very, very strange. And a lot of people make the mistake when they hear about Ice Age. They think it's cold all the time. That's not the case. You know, based on things that you've told us over the years, you do get warm summers, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, yes. As a matter of fact, during an ice age, it's really not that much colder than it is right now. For instance, I'll give the example, is during the last ice age, Seattle was covered by 4,000 feet of ice. I mean, 4/5 of a mile straight up. But that ice only extended as far south as Olympia, Washington. When you went 150 miles south of Olympia, temperatures were only about 7 degrees colder than they are right now. In the equatorial rainforest belt, temperatures were almost identical to what they are right now. So you can absolutely survive an ice age. You know, I wouldn't want to be, you know, under a mile of ice, certainly, but if you're south of where the ice sheets extended, then you should be comparatively fine as long as you have food.
It is almost hard to imagine a city under a mile of ice. Now, of course, there was no city at the time, but it's still bizarre, isn't it?
Oh, it is. You know, I've, on the cover of my website, I have, not on my website, but on the cover of my book, Not By Fire.
And you won't tell me what city that is.
Well, no, we made it up.
Still looks like Chicago to me.
But I had a geologist from New York that complained to me. He said, if that is New York City, the ice is not deep enough. The ice was 5 times deeper than what I show on my book. So, but no, I that is not a particular city. I didn't want to get sued over that.
Where did all that ice that turned into water when it melted, where did it go?
It raised the ocean levels. I mean, that's why during the last ice age, actually sea levels were 370 feet lower than they are today. The strait between Russia and the United States was actually above water at that time because it's only 270 feet deep even today. So that's what happened, is as the ice melted, the sea levels rose, and they continued to rise. You know, I hear people worried about rising sea levels. Well, sea levels have been rising for 11,500 years. The amazing thing is, though, George, is that in the last 2 years, satellite measurements show that sea levels have declined the last 2 years in a row. And I think that's an indication that backs up what I'm saying. I think that's an indication that the glaciers are growing, because that's where the moisture goes.
I'm just now starting to see other scientists and meteorologists agreeing with you about this. So it's growing, isn't it? This belief that we're in an ice age.
They are. Yeah. One of the biggest ones that I'm proud of is Dr. Habibulo Abdusamatov from Russia. I was lucky enough to meet him a couple of years ago at a climate convention, but he has announced that he thinks, he bases on the sunspot cycle, is that we are headed into a mini ice age. I don't know that he's willing to agree to the full ice age yet, but he says that we're headed into a mini ice age by the year 2014. Well, that's not very far away. Now, Dr. Habibulo is not just a Russian scientist. He's an astrophysicist, and he happens to be the astrophysicist that's also in charge of the Russian portion of the International Space Station.
Same guy.
That's a big one to have him say that we're headed into a little ice age.
Robert Felix's website is iceagenow.com. This book that he wrote some time ago is still out there, Not by Fire, But by Ice. It's a compelling story about a coming new ice age. And believe me, it could happen during your lifetime and your kids. I'll be back in a moment. More with Robert Felix this hour on Coast to Coast AM, including some phone calls from you. So don't touch your dial. We'll be right back. Robert, what do we look for an impending ice age? What are the signs?
I think a big sign, of course, well, the record snows, but I think a big sign is going to be a volcanic activity, because during previous ice ages, we've seen that volcanic activity did increase tremendously. And of course, then there's the ice age cycle. There's a cycle to ice ages. They return approximately every 11,500 years. This is known as the Milankovitch cycle.
Almost like clockwork, isn't it?
Almost like clockwork. You know, there'll be a bigger one and a smaller one, a bigger one, a smaller one. Well, the one 11,500 years ago, when we had what was called the Younger Dryas, that wasn't even a big one, and that killed 40% of the larger animals in the north, the entire species, the mastodon, the mammoth, the saber-toothed cat, the short-faced bear. That wasn't even a big one. So I wish that the computer models would have that Milankovitch cycle in their models. I think we'd be seeing an entirely different story. But anyway, for the normal everyday person, watch what's happening with volcanic activity. As that picks up, we're going to be seeing cooler and cooler skies. And at the same time, we're going to be seeing more and more underwater volcanic activity. And I see that underwater volcanic activity as heating the oceans, sending more moisture into the sky, which then comes back to us as the giant rainstorms and giant snowstorms. Look at last winter in the American West. I mean, it was in Montana, in Wyoming, in Idaho, in Utah. They had record snow, two times normal, three times normal. Some areas in California had seven times the normal, 728% of normal snowfall. That is how ice ages begin.
And the wind patterns are crazy. I mean, tonight, for example, Las Vegas had a wind advisory. They were gusting up to 60, 70 miles an hour.
Yes, and again, I think it has to do with the jet stream changing things. By the way, you have a lot of listeners in other countries, right?
Yes, we do.
Because I have written on my website about the huge record-breaking snowstorms in Romania. They had 140,000 people trapped by the snow.
Trapped.
They were, but the thing is that I'm not getting information about that. The U.S. media is not talking about it. So I'm hoping that some of the listeners in those other areas might let me know what's happening, because Montenegro, Turkey, Armenia, Japan, Macedonia, Serbia, I mean, some of these areas had snow that was 13 and a half feet.
Robert, take it upon yourself to send information to Lex, our webmaster. You know Lex. And,
sure.
You know, we can post information on our Facebook account. We can Twitter it. We can put it on our website. You be responsible for that. Just get them the information.
Okay.
All right?
Great. I'd love that, because I would like to hear from people who are actually there, who can tell me the truth of what's going on.
All right. Let's take a few calls and continue chatting with you while we've got you this hour. Jack is in Mankato, Minnesota, and now he's on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Jack.
Hi, John. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Jack. How are you?
Long-time listener. This is the one-eyed Jack from Minnesota. Say, Robert, I'm not a meteorologist by any means, and I'm 60 years old, and we live about an hour south of the Twin Cities here in Minnesota. We're in, I would call, south central.
Down toward Rochester?
We're north of Rochester.
Okay.
We're literally about 60 minutes south of Minneapolis, centrally located pretty much. We have had the most unusual winter. I don't think we've had 8 inches of snow all year.
Which is weird for Minnesota. I lived there back in 1978, Robert. It snowed in October and didn't melt until April.
I went to architecture school at the University of Minnesota, and it was the coldest time I've ever spent in my life.
We would plug our cars in to keep the engine block warm. I think they still do that, but Jack's right. It's been very, very strangely mild.
It really has, you know, and yet, what was it, before Halloween, we had record snow on the East Coast, you know, foot of snow in Hartford, Connecticut. It's been weird.
My granddaughter sent me a text from St. Louis today, 72 degrees and sunny. It's weird.
There have been times this year, Jack, when it's been warmer in Seattle than it was in Florida.
That's right. How much does the magnetic reversals have to do with this?
Well, I think that has to do with it, too, because during previous magnetic reversals, I've certainly seen volcanic, you know, when I do the research, volcanic activity picked up tremendously. 11,500 years ago, there was the Gothenburg magnetic reversal. 23,000 years ago was the Mono Lake magnetic reversal. 33,500 years ago, we had the Lake Mungo. And each of those periods, volcanic activity went up tremendously. I'm assuming that, I don't have a way to prove it yet, but I'm assuming that underwater volcanic activity went up tremendously at the same time. You know, when I started writing the book, scientists thought there were 10,000 underwater volcanoes in the entire world. Now, scientists, NASA says that they estimate that there are more than 3 million underwater volcanoes. So it has changed just in the 20 years since I started writing the book and researching it. That number has changed so dramatically. It's hard to believe.
It's like a burner on a stove, isn't it? Each volcano.
Yes. Oh yes. You know when I don't remember where it is right now. I posted an article a few months ago about a high mountain lake that is totally surrounded by snow and ice. That the lake is 108 degrees, all from an underwater volcano. Now, if a volcano can heat a mountain lake to 108 degrees, imagine what it can do underneath the warmer ocean. Or think of the Canary Islands, El Hierro. That underwater volcano there has been heating the water around El Hierro tremendously. Or if anybody's been to Hawaii and seen the lava pour into the sea, you see the water boil. So I think eventually we'll be admitting that underwater volcanoes have a lot more to do with ocean warming. I call it ocean warming, not global warming, that underwater volcanoes are triggering that ocean warming.
Okay, let's go to Al in Cleveland, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Al, take it away.
Hello, George.
Hi,
first-time caller.
Great to have you with us.
I just wanted to ask, over the next 50 years or so, what kind of snowfall can we expect? I mean, I'm pretty far north. Can I expect a 4-mile glacier over my head again?
Let's predict out on that one, Robert. Can you?
Well, I don't think that you're going to expect a 4-mile glacier over your head. What I am thinking is that we're going to see more and more snow. And the thing is, I've had a lot of people, you know, comment on my articles on the website that ice ages take like 1,000 years to begin or 2,000. But no, the bad thing is, Al, is that ice ages actually begin very rapidly. Scientists began realizing this back in like the 1989, 1990. A research project called GRIP, Greenland Ice Core Project, started drilling deep cores into the ice in central Greenland. They discovered that every ice age in the last 250,000 years began in less than 20 years, sometimes in less than 3 years. So it's when it comes in a hurry. And again, I'm saying watch the volcanic activity. If you see volcanic activity picking up fast, then I think you're going to see lots bigger snowstorms in Ohio.
Okay, that's a good point then. That'll be the barometer, huh, Robert?
I think it will be, yes.
Ian is in Shavertown, Pennsylvania, first-time caller. Hey, welcome to the show, Ian.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Robert. We finally have spoken. We have been in touch by email, as you may recall, if you think about my name.
I didn't get your last name?
My last name, I don't know, did I get them over the air?
Nah, no need.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I cut you off and I wasn't sure whether you had or not.
No, I don't get them on the air, but you know my last name if you think about that at the moment. I had the pleasure of working with you very shortly on your last book. I am wondering, and I've followed you very closely, and I think what you've done in your compilation of data and the way you've put it together is magnificent. But watching what has been happening in the winter in Europe this year and the shifting of the magnetic pole, I'm just wondering, we look at all these maps of the ice ages in the past, and people are worrying, as the gentleman just before me asked, is he going to be under a glacier? And I'm just wondering, with the shifting of the magnetic fields, will the distribution of the ice age potentially also be shifted so that Europe, North Africa, the Indian subcontinent will be covered by the snow and ice that we had over here the last time around, that we would be relatively mild?
No, I don't think so. I have an ice age map on my website that shows where the ice extended the last ice age. My guess is that it's going to do essentially the same thing this time around. It may be a little bit, I think this time it will be a little bit further, because about every 105,000 years we have a bigger ice age. It's based on something called orbital stretch, because our orbit around the sun is not a perfect circle. It changes from an ellipse to a near circle and back to an ellipse about every 105,000 years. That's when we get the bigger ice ages, and unfortunately that's the one that's due right now. So but no, and then for others, I think you know better than this, Ian, but for the ones who don't, I do not think the ice, that the earth turns upside down or anything like that. I just think that magnetic north moves south, but that the position of the earth still remains essentially the same.
Robert, you just asked how far out do we reach. Let's go to Thomas in Germany for you. Go ahead, Thomas.
Hello, gentlemen. Good evening.
Hi.
I saw a chart as long ago as 1970 about mean world temperatures that was making a very strong pattern from a sort of chartist's point of view that indicated a dramatic downturn, in my view, to come quite quickly, quite soon, which might well be now. But what I'd like to do is to go on to ask you about your views of the forthcoming temperatures in parts of Scotland, because I'm considering moving from Germany to Aberdeen in Scotland to join Donald Trump and people of that sort.
I don't want to tell anybody they shouldn't live somewhere.
Just say it the way you feel it. What do you feel?
No, if I'm off by 100 years, that affects your life. I think it's coming now, but during the last ice age, there were polar bears roaming the outskirts of London. If that's any help to you. But I don't know how long it'll take before that actually happens. I think we're going to be seeing bigger and bigger snowstorms.
What are the signs show now, Robert? Right now, things getting colder?
Right now, I see bigger and bigger snowstorms.
Yeah.
Right now, I do see volcanic activity picking up. What I worry about is if we should have, you know, some sort of a super volcano. If that happens, we'll be in an ice age within a couple months.
That's pretty darn fast, Robert.
Yeah, but it would happen. I mean, I've just put a map on my website today that shows that when Krakatoa exploded, there was no plant growth for 2 years. And it shows, at least in the United States, where the ashfall went from Yellowstone and from Long Valley caldera. And when you look at what a supervolcano can do, Well, Thomas, you're near a super volcano in Germany.
Sure is. Yeah.
I guess probably. I don't know. Do we want to be buried under the snow or blown up by a super volcano?
You know, it's funny, Robert. In a haha sense, we've been talking about things like this for 10 years plus. Yes. You know, we've talked about the possibility of getting hit by an asteroid. Now they say one's coming very close next year. We've talked about solar flares. We could get hit with those any day. And, you know, and we've talked about ice ages with you for some time, and here we go. It's almost as if we're destined for this.
Well, I have been talking about this since 1997 on Coast to Coast.
Yep.
And I haven't had to change my story. You know, I do believe that we are seeing the beginnings now with, I mean, we've had major snowstorms for the last like 3 years that have been epic snowstorms. And I think that those are an indication. But as to the individual spot like Thomas is asking about, you know, it depends on that jet stream. If Iceland starts having a bunch of volcanic eruptions, which I think is possible with all the activity there, then Scotland's going to be right downwind from it.
Let's go to Jerry in Maryville, Washington. Hey, Jerry, go ahead. Whoop, there you go.
What was the date that was going to be potential activity possibly here on Earth? Was it the 8th of March? I couldn't remember quick enough to write it down.
I didn't have any specific dates. Robert?
No, I don't have any specific dates. Okay. Are you talking about a solar flare or what?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh, the solar flares. Okay, the solar flare has already been launched from the sun. It mm-hmm. could hit us on the 8th or 9th, maybe. And then they say it could be a glance.
Okay. And if one of these sun events was to come close enough, would it act like an electromagnetic pulse?
Yes. It would knock out the grid if it was big enough.
Okay.
Jerry, have you ever read 1 Second After? That is an amazing book that tells what would happen to this world after
a... It's a blueprint for that.
EMP. It's absolutely petrifying to read it.
You know, Robert, everything is tied into the grid right now. Our ATMs, our gasoline pumps, our stores, our cash registers, everything, our computers.
Yeah.
I mean, it is unbelievable. Our cell phones, everything would go.
I can't imagine, reading that book that I just mentioned, you know, that when the grid has gone down, they figure that a big flare could wipe out the huge transformers. Those huge transformers take a year to rebuild and get back in place.
And we don't have any backup.
That's if you have electricity with which to build them. Are you going to build them by hand? You know,
I've always said I hate to be the country that is facing the X flare when it hits. But you know what? As we revolve, you only got this 24-hour spin. You're bound to get zapped because it's ongoing.
Yes. No, that is very scary. At least with that, I guess we'd only have a few seconds, maybe a lot of us, to worry about it. But I would recommend anybody read that book. I don't sell it. It's not for sale on my website, but 1 Second After is certainly one scary book.
Well, and the one that you are, not by fire, but by ice. It's Robert Felix's book about a impending coming ice age, which he believes we are in right now. Now, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, Jeff Wise joins us. We'll talk about his work, Extreme Fear, The Science of Your Mind in Danger, an incredible theory about the human mind and how it responds to life or death situations. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.